Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on the 9th of February, 2021. A pleasure to have you here with us today, as it is every time you listen to our shows. You know we're part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org, where this podcast will be archived, along with all our other podcasts. And also you can go over and see our magazine, Equity in Access, which is a wonderful online journal. We invite you to join with us. Obviously, it's free to educators. Again, ace-ed.org. We are the epicenter of equity in pre-K-12. We want to hear your voice out there, so please join with us. Again, ace-ed.org. And if, by the way, if you want to follow me, all the icons are over there for the consortium. If you want to follow me too, it's over at on Twitter, it's EduTalkLarry. On LinkedIn, it's my name, Larry Jacobs. And Facebook is either Education Talk Radio or Larry Jacobs, just if you want to. Just figured I'd let you know. We got a nice show for you today. I'm going to bring these folks on right now. We're going to talk to, we're going out to California. It's snowing. I'll make them feel good. It's snowing here in Maine, where I live, across the country. Okay, just so you know that, Marina and Brett. Okay, got about 1 to 3 inches coming down here, which is a typical day here in Maine. Yeah, that's not a well.
That sounds nice.
If we get a foot, it doesn't even, you know, foot. Oh, that'll be going in a minute, so that's no problem. Okay, it's just ridiculous. But I just want to introduce you a little better than I just did. Okay. We're going to talk about how to make remote hybrid learning a permanent model, which is coming down the pike, gang, just in case nobody figured that out yet. And they're doing it in the Corona Norco Unified School District out in California. Okay, and I've got Brad Hellickson, who's the vice principal, and also teacher Marina Amador, who have already started talking. So I'll just, ladies first. Hi, Marina.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm Marina Amador.
I know you are. Good. I'm Larry Jacobs, and you have to call me Larry, okay?
Okay, Larry. Nice to meet you.
Good enough. Where is? I'll ask you, and then we'll get to Brad. Where is the Corona Norco?
So Corona Norco Unified School District is on the cusp of Riverside County, which we call the IE, San Bernardino and Riverside County, are the IE.
The Inland
Empire. Centrally located.
Yeah, the Inland Empire.
Yeah, the Inland Empire. And we're right on the border with Orange County. So we are a bedroom community because of our location. We have families that are commuting to Orange County, Los Angeles, a couple I've heard of to Palm Springs and San Diego, but a majority are commuters. So we're this big bedroom community, and we service a very diverse population of students.
You know, I think I've been out there. I remember a town called Temecula. Is that where we're talking about?
Yes. No, Temecula is about 45 minutes
absolutely.
From Corona.
But is it in your school district?
It's a little more south. Temecula
is
its own city.
Okay, got it. Okay, good enough. Hi, Brad.
Yeah, so.
By the way,
right
I have
to
tell
you.
Hey, good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Brad. And by the way, I have to tell you something. I was in Temecula years and years ago. I'm talking years and years ago. Okay, I had a client out there. And I drove over from probably Newport Beach, let's say. All right. And the whole way, it was I remember a beautiful drive over the mountains and down into the desert. And the whole way, there were these big billboards that said they're trout fishing in Temecula.
What?
Okay. I'm not done. So I was 5 miles, you know, 4 miles, these big billboards. So I'm thinking, what the heck? Because I'm in the desert. Okay, you know what the geography is like. And I finally get turned here, and I had to go see what this was. And I turned there, and what they had was a gigantic outdoor, above-ground swimming pool. Okay, I guess trout. I'm not making this up. Okay, and they had the walkways built around it, and there must have been 30 guys standing there fishing for trout in the swimming pool. And I kid you not, trout fishing in Temecula, okay? And I'm sure that's long gone, but it was back. Temecula had like 4 buildings in it. I think it was 1838 when I was there, okay? That was the year.
Oh, wow.
But it was a long time ago. Okay, and I'll tell you, I just laughed for half an hour after I saw that. So it was just amazing, I got to tell you. But that has nothing to do with you. What's the main city in Corona Norco?
That's hysterical.
What's the main city, Brad?
Corona is the main city.
Oh, Corona. Okay.
Yeah,
go for
Corona.
It, Brad.
Yep.
Bad name for a city.
Hey, good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Brett. Bad name for a city. Great name for a beer. Bad name for a city. Corona these days. Are you getting any trouble from that?
Yep. Well, it's interesting. It used to have a racetrack that went around the center part of the town, and the Hollywood folk and L.A. folk would come out, and they'd go to these races, henceforth the Corona or the Ring. And that's still there, and there's beautiful old houses there. In fact, the guy that was played the lion in Wizard of Oz had a house built here, and it still has a stained glass window on the back of it with the yellow brick road. Yeah.
Wow.
So
wow.
Kind of interesting. Yeah.
That is pretty interesting.
Yep.
Okay. That is pretty interesting. Are you guys?
So now Corona Norco is actually three towns. It's Corona Norco and Eastvale. So we're a unified district. We're pretty big place now.
I bet it is. And Norco is also a city, so I'm learning all this stuff. Okay, it's not like an acronym or something.
Morristown,
like North
USA.
County or anything like that. Yeah. Say it again.
Yep. North Corona. And you can still go there, and there's horses and chickens and goats everywhere. And
wow.
It's a very rural city. And kinda neat.
That is,
you can ride your
go ahead.
Sidewalks are for horses. In Norco. And if you go to the local bar, there's a corral for your horse.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow, I'm glad to hear that.
Virtually
kind of
all the restaurants have kitchen posts.
Wow. I got a big smile on my face. It's nice to know there's places like that still around. That's really, really cool. And I asked Julie, how you guys Julie, Marina, I was on the last show. Marina, how are you doing? Okay, with what's going on with your school district being open, et cetera, with all the, no pun, the terrible thing to say, coronavirus, which isn't named after you guys, by the way.
Yeah, I know. We've definitely taken the joke.
I know.
So
you paid the price,
the hit.
I'm sure. Yeah.
We are not named very well. I've been doing okay because I've been doing this virtual learning now for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually increased, in order to be in compliance with everything that our union agreed to that teachers should do, I actually ended up decreasing the amount of work that we do because we already have such a great virtual environment. And we were also doing 2 days in person. So that 2 days in person decreased my workload, but yet I was still able to invest that energy into the virtual environment, which we already have a very functional virtual environment. We do proper orientations and set everybody up so our students can be successful. And we finished out the school year last year pretty well. And we got started this year. It was hard switching. The hardest part about it was switching our orientations that we do from in-person to fully virtual. That was a huge challenge. And that took days and lots of Zooms and was exhausting. I miss being able to do those in-person supports because that's much easier to sit down and do that. But aside from that, I feel like we, in this program, because we've already been doing this now for our fourth year, I'm not as stressed out as my colleagues. Some of my friends call me, and I just listen to their stories, and I'm like, I know what you're saying, because that was year one for us. Like, we went through a lot of what's happening nationally year one and two.
That's a great anecdotal story about what's going on out here. And believe me, what you guys have been doing for 4 years is coming down the pike, okay, for a lot of people. This pandemic is going to change education. And that's why I was so excited that Ian overturned it in, introduced us, because, this to me is really exciting. Brad, you're the vice principal 4 years now at the Hybrid School of Innovation, okay, in Corona, Norco, I mean, 4 years ago, why did you start this? Tell us the model. Tell us a little bit about the kids who go there. Go ahead.
Yeah. See, I go back a little further than that.
Okay.
I was brought down to our district office 12 years ago to do special technology projects. One of the things that I was handed way back then was – the need to have a we had a virtual credit recovery program, and I'll use the term virtual very liberally in this case. Basically,
yep.
kids would sit down at a computer and do a whole lot of nothing and get a grade. So it wasn't a terrific thing. And since my focus was on, you know, special projects and innovation, I attended one of the very early iNACOL conferences and got my introduction to what virtual learning could look like, and then brought that back, and with a really fantastic team of people, we started an online program. We called it Online, and our push was not to start it in credit recovery. What we wanted to do was start it off in college prep. So we wanted to be able to start filling gaps for kids that needed gaps filled with digital curriculum, and being able to take these classes virtually and then take it and bring it into a credit recovery environment later on. And so we kind of flipped that model, whereas, you know, back 12 years ago, digital curriculum was, oh, well, we'll just have kids, you know, finish some classes up or earn some credits where they need it. We were very early on board with the let's do it for college prep kids. So we worked with the NCAA and the UC system extensively and started virtual learning that way. And that program grew pretty rapidly. Within the first 2 to 3 years, we had over 500 kids a semester that were taking at least one fully virtual class. And one of the big game changers there was that we would run into kids that would need more than that. Their schedules would be such that, hey, I need to do more of my classes online because I play in a national level sports team, or I am an actor or an actress, or I'm a model. What can you do? And the problem with that is the structures ran so deep in public education, you know, around how do you get your ADA for that? How do you fund that?
Of course. Yes, it's an old system.
Yeah,
it's a bureaucracy. It's a bureaucratic system. It works one way. It's hard to make a change.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because we were getting more and more students that would become interested in doing, you know, more virtual classes online. And this was still campfires in cyberspace days. And that was a long time ago. And anyway, the problem became, well, we're getting more and more demand, and we were trickling kids out of public education to the charter schools at that point in time because they could offer more flexibility in scheduling. And then ultimately, we developed a piece of legislation in California that changed our independent study ed code so we could actually allow some a virtual learning environment and run it under alternative ed. And mm-hmm. we started doing that 6 years ago now, and we opened up the doors to fully virtual learning for kids. And That kind of paved the way to looking at starting the hybrid school, which began, it's a little bit of brief, quick background here because I know we don't have all that long, but it began as a model where we would have students in physically for 2 days, and then the rest of the time they would be, virtual.
Mm-hmm.
And all kind of challenges come with that. I mean, there's a huge number of challenges and a pretty large learning curve. But I'll be honest with you, we started to get more and more and more students that were asking for fully virtual. And,
interesting. That is interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah. It's very interesting. Our population, we were running the hybrid school, and then in parallel to that, we were running a fully virtual program. And our number of students in the fully virtual program exceeded the number of students in the hybrid program. So our plan was to shift the whole school this year over to a fully virtual model that was built around what we like to call learning centers that are available on demand for kids, teachers can require students to come in if they need additional help and additional assistance. So we've got these beautiful classrooms, and we want to repurpose them more to a learning center model and allow kids to become, have this option of being fully virtual. And the interesting transition, Larry, it's a beautiful thing because I've watched this now for 11 years with kids being fully virtual. It's kind of interesting there's a huge transition because you're taking kids out of an environment where they have been incredibly structured in this sort of these contrived temporal boundaries of, you're going to be in math from 9 to 9:45, and then that's the end of math. Now you have to shift to a completely different discipline, and that cognitive break there is, it's rough. I mean, it really, really is rough. It's discontinuity in learning. And
What I've always said, Brad Marina, there's no human in the world who thinks for 45 minutes about Charles Dickens. Then shuts that up. Thinks about geometry for the next 45 minutes. That's not what. And I don't know how we got into the mode of the way we've been doing it for 400 years, where that's what's supposed. That's right. The way people are supposed to learn. When obviously nobody thinks like that. So you guys are. What you're saying, Brad, okay, is right on with my thoughts there, but please continue. I did mean to interrupt, but I don't want to interrupt your train of thought there. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, you're spot on with that. But the interesting thing is it's a beautiful transition to watch with kids when you move them out of that environment and suddenly they've gone from sitting in the back seat of the car with their headphones on, looking at their phones, to all of a sudden they're now driving the car and having to pay attention to the surroundings and everything else that's going on around them.
Nice.
And what's interesting, and I think we're going to see this so much in the coming year as we return to in-person instruction, is that there's going to be a lot of kids that all of a sudden, hey, I've been in charge of this now. I've been in the driver's seat. I don't want to relinquish that. I don't want to go back to, having contrived structure around me that, forces me into this model that really it doesn't work. And we're going to see, Disrupting Class talked about, when the steamboat came along, it wasn't good enough for everybody. It was good enough for just a few people at the very beginning, and it took a long time to adopt it. Well, we've just forced an entire nation into adopting a new model, and some kids are going to,
I agree with you. We forced everybody to do it, okay? But I have to say, you guys have been doing it long before it became an emergency to do it. So you had the time, to speak, to see how it worked, and over the course of time, not instantaneously, get it right. Okay? And the kid, and I'm reminded, I'm not a particular fan of his, but Senator Cruz of Texas, okay, when Obamacare was passed, okay, didn't want it to happen. And his reason was because he doesn't think the government should pay for health care, okay, which is his prerogative to think like that. But he said, well, if we give people health care, they may like it. And then how do you go back to the old system? And it's the same exact thing, okay?
Yeah.
And I don't agree with his philosophy, but his statement is accurate. When you give people something that works better, they're not going to want to go back to the old system, okay? So if a kid thrives in virtual – okay, and time, they're managing their own time, all right? you know, their own learning, I'll say it that way, it's hard to go back to the old system, but it brings up another point. I'm going to go over to Marina. Marina, you weren't trained to teach virtually. You were, no teacher.
No.
Okay, so well, so
no,
talk about,
I wasn't.
Yeah, so talk about that. How'd you learn to do it?
So that is very interesting. Yeah, I started teaching when I was 23, very young, and I always like wanted to use PowerPoints and stuff because those are things we were doing when I was graduating from college and in my master's program at the time. But we didn't have the technology in our classroom, and I was so excited when I was given an LCD projector, and I instantly moved my life in that direction.
Let me put my age in there so you don't feel bad. When I graduated college, the stapler was considered a highly innovative machine, the stapler. So we'll go from there. Scotch tape dispenser. The Scotch tape dispenser was considered high tech. Yeah, so anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I totally understand. Totally understand. Their cell phones didn't exist when I was born. I mean, well, they may have. No, not when I was. Yeah. Anyway, I remember paying 89 cents for gas when I first started driving. Like, I'm a lot older. Anyway, so I was so excited when I got my first LCD projector. And then what really got me involved when I was in Krona Norco and I really started investing in technology was actually Turnitin.com because in the department I was students were using computers, and we were taken into a computer lab one time and shown, here's how you can check for plagiarism with a student. Mm-hmm. It was like a five-minute thing, and I was like, ooh, this could make my life so much easier, and this is just
this is a
traditional classroom environment.
Yeah.
And so I started
cool.
using it, and every semester I would read the whole user guide, and back then turned it and had a little location where you could like vote on what you wanted to see, new tools. And it was so exciting to interact with that because like a semester later or a year later, I would see something I voted on pop up in the platform. And it was so, I just really
That's
became
cool.
a big fan of it and started using it
yeah.
all the time. And then the program director that worked with Brad at the district level where they developed hybrid school and got us a school code and got us in WASC and all this stuff. She actually said to me one time, or she actually created a video of me with Turnitin and our students so that other people in the district understood, hey, you have this awesome tool to support not only like catching plagiarism, but how mm-hmm. Turnitin has developed it. It actually reinforces our instruction. I've had students say, oh, you're not kidding. If I don't put the quote right up against the period, it's going to flag as plagiarized. And it's so, so it's just like a reality reinforcement double check. So anyhow, that kind of led me to her. And she one time was talking to me and said, I think you'd make a great virtual teacher or an online teacher. Would you be interested? At the time we were using the term online. And I told her, yes.
Yeah.
And then she wanted to take me to iNACL and ITSE and all these different programs. And I loved the program I was in. I was in a middle college program, and I was super happy. Hellickson actually came into my classroom one day and said, I know I don't know you. He drove over. He said, are you in your room? And he drove over within like 5-10 minutes, was in my classroom, and he stood there and made sure that I signed up and agreed to go to iNACL with him and the group of teachers that we now have formed this with. Like, he was very insistent. And I'm really grateful he did that. Like, I definitely owe him a debt of gratitude because, you know, in education, when you find a place where you're content, I mean, nothing's ever perfect.
Yeah.
But if you can find a place that's functional and you're happy, it's probably
absolutely. And you feel like you're doing a good job and you're successful at it. Okay. So
yeah.
Let me, Marina, when you talk to your fellow educators. Actually, you're doing that right now, but I meant more locally. Okay. What do you tell them about your run in virtual education? What should they look for?
My run?
Yeah, you know, I mean, your experience. You know, what are the pitfalls? What do they look for? What's the most crazy thing? The most important thing? Whatever.
The most important thing? The most crazy thing? I think the most important thing is a mind shift for teachers. Is that we are so used to being, we are the teacher, and we actually at Hybrid have very intentionally, and I wanted to also say, like, iNACL for me was like going back and retaking my credential. Going to that for a couple of years is where I learned some of these ideas Yeah, I'm so grateful that I was sent to these online conferences, like a bunch. I've been to a bunch at this point. Thanks to Mr. Hellickson and to our prior director. The two of them got me out there and signed me up for these things. And it helped me. It gave me a new vernacular, a new way to access and reframe education in my teaching. And so we have intentionally, as a teacher team, shifted from calling ourselves teachers to instructors. So we're the instructional team. It's huge. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something we really have to just move. We have to move in that direction. There is a group of teachers right now who is working on our ERWC course. We have a very specific in the state of California, CUSC.
What is ERWC? I don't know what ERWC is.
It's a very specific 12th grade course, expository reading and writing, and it's created and it's sent down to us from the Cal States, and it's something all 12th graders in the state of California should have taken by the time they get to college or even community college. So they are shifting that from into online this year, like, you know, by the seat of their pants, because everybody's had to do that. And it's been interesting. The person in charge of it has like, oh, everybody's having all these tech issues and they're complaining and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, we've had some, but that's okay. Like, you have to learn as a teacher, you know, that phone ringing 10 times, that's what technology issues are. It's that same phone ringing 10 times in the middle of you trying to give a 15-minute instructional piece, and it's a disruption. And we know how to handle it in the brick-and-mortar environment because we learn. And so you just have to shift all that. The students have to shift that. They're used to that disruption. They know how to still pick up instruction. And it's the same thing with tech issues. Like, oh, okay, so this happened. We're not giving up. Everybody, we roll with it. You just learn how to – you got to reframe and learn all those still things. All those things that we deal with in the classroom still exist. We just now they have shifted. So now it's like, oh, this link didn't work. Give me a minute. Here you go. It's working now. It's those little tiny things you just have to readjust, and you really are the facilitator and instructor and a thought. Like, you have to work with the students and really teaching them independence. It's huge that they have to own their education. And I'm happy to sit in a Zoom until they can figure that out for themselves. And I've done that many times, one-on-one with a kid, and just, like, got them to the point where they're like, oh, so that's how I can use this, and that's how I can still, you know, access this knowledge, where in a classroom they would turn to their classmate, you know, and have that talking with each other. They now have to learn how to do that more so with themselves or with me or with their family members. And it's just a shift.
I got to say something, Marina, you are a real pistol. I really love having your insights in here.
You
are really something. I got to tell you. Okay, you're so enthusiastic,
you
really are. It just comes across.
Thank you.
All right, it really does. Well, you get that sense right from listening to you and hearing what you're saying. I think it's just really, really cool. All right. So, Brad, let me ask you this. You're welcome. Brad, your school of innovation, it's hybrid. It works, right? What happens to the whole district? Knowing that this works and knowing it works so well, where's the whole district going to go now that we're all kind of involved in this?
Well, I think that's a question that we're all asking right now, and really, it's a much larger question than even our district, because it comes down to having to shift a lot of the structures at the state level that have been in place. I mean, we're operating on Ed Code that was put in place in the 60s and 70s,
yep,
for heaven's sakes. A lot of it, and a lot of it deals with, you know, how do you fund this thing? And right now in the state of California, we have a Senate bill that's allowing us to operate virtually through, you know, June 30th, but that's going to sunset. And the big question becomes then, once that goes away and we go back to business as usual, but we've now got, you know, 10% of our student population that's saying, I'm
exactly.
This virtual model worked for me. How are we able to adapt our laws and our structures in the state to allow this type of thing to happen in a public school environment? Because right now, Honestly, outside of alternative education, and in particular a very specific flavor of independent study, there is not, in our state at least, a mechanism that allows public schools to run a virtual learning program.
Wow.
In the current structure of the public school. So that's a huge problem and something that we're looking at now. And I would encourage I'm encouraging our district as well as any other school districts that are looking at the writing on the wall here to start becoming active and lobbying our legislature to start adopting some of these changes. At least stopgap measures so we can figure it out overall that will allow us to continue to do the good work that we've been doing. The other thing that
can I put in two cents there really quickly?
Sure.
Ellison is saying with the ED code is huge because we as an instructional team this summer, we were watching the union interpret the state bill that was put into place because of COVID and after March, after the fact, because that's, often how it goes with the bureaucracy. And we were looking at that versus the ED code that we operate under, and we were just like, wow, how are these teachers going to do that? You cannot just take a straight brick-and-mortar schedule and environment and instructional model and put it straight into a virtual. It's going to fail, and it's going to struggle, and that's what they've had to deal with, and they've actually had to relax on a lot of things. You can't do that to a teacher either, because the teachers – it's so important, and something that I learned with iNACL, which really helped me, I think, as an online, as a virtual teacher, that's our new term, is you can't just throw it into, directly into this new technology. We actually have to teach the technology to students. So there, we increase the learning. There's not just learning the online tool, but there's also learning the content. And so the straight across, we expected teachers and students to do massive learning of not only all these tech tools, but then all the content at the same time, at the same level and the same degree. And that's, you're just going to burn everybody out. Like, that's impossible. It's too much. Like, we only have a certain capacity or a certain amount of energy in a day. And so we, as a instructional team at Hybrid, we're like, we are so grateful for our ED code because it doesn't burn out the teacher or the student. That's huge. That ED code piece is huge.
Thank you, Marina.
And what Marina said is
Mr. Hellickson.
Very true. What Marina said is so very true is that the first approach to this, our reaction is, well, let's try to recreate the brick and mortar environment.
Oh yeah,
that
doesn't work. That's been the problem.
It doesn't work, and it's once students, start adapting to and understanding, hey, virtual learning, and this is how it works, you lose that element of control, and you have to be ready to lose that and ready to adapt to a completely new learning environment. What I'm hoping, and I'll just tell you this right from the start, I'm a big proponent of competency-based education, where we break down all those temporal boundaries. I don't see why we place kids at grade levels based on age rather than competency, because we do such a disservice to our kids. We do such a disservice to our learners. Now, in a traditional,
like I said earlier, it's a bureaucracy. It's a bureaucracy. We have to change.
I mean, in a traditional brick and mortar environment, you couldn't necessarily. You have to place by age, there's some element of safety there. There's some, element of social interaction that happens. But now we have a mechanism and we have demonstrated efficacy that allows us to move one step further. We move to allowing virtual learning, and then we move to looking more at breaking down this whole construct of grades and grade levels, and we start looking more at competencies. And then our instructional staff is a beautiful thing. You've got the kid in the driver's seat now. Well, there's four or five different routes you can take to get to your destination. And we don't all have to go that same route. There might be some congestion on the freeway, so we need to Yeah. And
spoken like
what
a Californian.
Our instructors do is correct wrong turns.
But it's really something. You guys have learned so much from this, okay? And what you have done, and I'm so thrilled. I'm going to stay in touch with you because I'm so thrilled to find out that this has worked so well for Corona Norco, and the model is there for other people, and your insights, you know, into virtual learning because you've had such great experience about it. It's great. We got to go in just a minute. I wanted to let you know, though, Marina, just so you know, iNACL doesn't exist anymore. Do you know that?
I know. I'm very aware of that.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I know.
Okay.
I know they have shifted.
Yeah, they're called the Aurora
shift
Institute.
Within iNACL. Yep. Or,
it's
Aurora,
Aurora
Institute.
Institute.
There we go.
The
name
That's
was
okay.
failing me.
Yeah.
But the last time I went was their
the
last
historical
year at iNACL.
Historically they are iNACL, but it's changed now. It's Aurora. Actually, I went on the website just to be sure. It's aurora-institute.org. And it's always been a lovely organization, and I hope they continue to do good work.
Fantastic organization.
Yeah.
Well, I would encourage anybody in the administration side of things or district level, if they want that shift with their instructional team, conferences like that, it really was amazing, and it was inspirational. It was really good too, because something we didn't even touch on that I think Helixson started to touch on was if we stop looking at age as far as what grade level students are in and start looking at their abilities, now that shifts where does the social emotional learning happen and how does that whole thing, and there's a whole other component to that, and I learned so much about that going to conferences and understanding better how to separate those things out, because we're no longer
doing it in a
little environment of 30 students.
I did a show just before this one on social emotional learning with a company called Seven Mindsets.
Yeah.
I'll send that to you so you have it.
Awesome.
Okay, guys,
cool.
This was great. I can't thank you enough. You do great work out there, I got to tell you. And when I throw a snowball later today, I'll think of you. Or
well,
if I eat trout.
Thank you so much, and I'm grateful to TurnitIn.com for setting this up. This was fun.
Eat
trout.
It's great.
That is the funniest story about
Temecula.
I'm
telling you, trout fishing in Temecula. Believe me, it's not. God, it's got to be 40 years ago now, 35 years ago.
That's hilarious.
But I'll never forget that. I actually drove off the road to see the swimming pool. Okay?
Yeah, I
drove off the highway
to
see the swimming pool. Unbelievable. Anyway, guys, it's all built up now, and thank you so much. You guys do great work. Okay? Stay safe out there.
Have a good one, Larry.
Please.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Larry.
You Thank you, Brad. Thank you, Marina. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Take care.
And stay safe. Like I said before, California is a little touchy right now. Stay safe. And I got to thank my friend Ian McCullough over at Turnitin for introducing me to Brad and Marina. They're just great. Thank you, Ian. All right. And we're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. Tell your friends about what we're doing for equity. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. You too. Stay safe.